Good evening, I'm Neil Pringle. I have much pleasure in welcoming you all here on behalf of the Mechanical Engineering Branch and the System Engineering Society. And as you already know, Lachlan's going to do the presentation tonight and some new opportunities in space, I think it went out as.
Yes, that's the correct title.
So I'll hand it over to Lachlan.
Thank you, Neil. Thank you, it's a delight to be here this evening. Neil didn't mislead you, he gave you the correct title, New Opportunities in Space. I took the liberty of elaborating on that title, which makes it somewhat cryptic, which is Hyperion, Gaia, ABO, New Adventurers in Space. Because I look at any new opportunity as an adventure. It's a chance for we as engineers to undertake a project as an adventure. It's a chance to rejuvenate ourselves, to challenge ourselves, members of the team, to actually strive to do new things, to go forward. And they are new things. All three are space probes or space related. They are all new. And whilst feasibility studies for all the projects, in other words, all the projects have actually started, there's enormous opportunity for other Australians to get involved in this project because they will grow over the next 10 to 15 years. And they'll create opportunities for people to conduct research, for jobs, for teaching, for learning, basically in all fields that are related to our profession in engineering. And ABO is an opportunity to keep us young, to excite young scientists to come further into the future, and a chance for us to send advanced and highly intelligent robots to other planets. Now for something different. We're going to right a wrong that was caused by engineers. The first creature from this planet that we know about that went into space in orbit, not just suborbital, not to the edge of space, but actual orbital flight, was Laika. It was a little dog. Laika, I think, means bark. A dog, a Russian dog. That was put in Sputnik 2. Went up, orbited the Earth. Fantastic, living organism. Trouble was, no one on the design team had any intention of bringing Laika back alive. There was no system or mechanism to bring that dog back. And Laika sadly died in somewhere between 2 to 4 days of overheating of Sputnik, and eventually burnt up some months later as it came back into the atmosphere. And since then, other dogs have flown in space. Some of them have come back alive. But man's gone further than that. Man's gone to the moon. But was man's best friend there? No. Man's best friend was not there. Why did we leave our best friend away? And why would we even do this? Well, here's a way of doing it. And I'll explain why we would do this. First of all, what's ABO? ABO is a robotic dog. It's the most advanced commercially available consumer artificial intelligent robot that you can buy on this planet. It's made by the Sony Corporation. It has image recognition. It will disobey an order if it feels disgruntled. It has a personality. If you treat it badly, it will behave badly. But eventually it'll forgive you and you can try again, and if you continue to misbehave, it'll hide under the couch all the time, like a normal dog. But if you treat it nicely and be a good companion, then it will respond appropriately and it can be trained. There are soccer teams. There is an ABO World Cup. And there are engineers like you and me that actively devote all their recreational time, some to the point of divorce, to train their soccer team to compete in the World Cup. It's a fantastic, exciting event. And we are developing a study with the European Space Agency to put a team of ABO on the moon to explore, basically, how robots can interact and whether or not robotic teams can actually be used to explore a planet. And eventually design very sophisticated robots that would look nothing like a dog. They'll just have wheels or something, may not even have any wheels, but they'll be utilitarian things like mining robots that will probably just have a big auger, dig a hole in the ground. Another one will be a processor. But the one that digs the holes in the ground, something's got to get the ore to the one that processes. So there'll be another robot that takes the ore to the processing one. The processing one's got to be able to process it. And then you've got to have another robot to bring whatever it's mining back to Earth or to the space station or wherever it's working. In other words, be able to mine or explore or farm areas that would be too difficult for humans to entertain. And AVO is an excellent way of exploring that technology. It's also an excellent way of taking the scientist of tomorrow with us on this journey. And in keeping with what the youth of today have become to demand to keep their interest, they want to do it. They want the hands-on experience. They don't want to read in the newspaper. They don't read newspapers. They don't want to look at the newspaper and say, oh, you know, scientists have sent a dog to the moon. So what? Who cares? Scientists have sent a man to the moon or to Mars. So what? Who cares? I didn't have anything to do with it. What's the importance to me? And that's the biggest failing with the space agency. Very few people on this planet realise that they could make a difference or have an input into the space industry. Some, if you prod them, say, yes, I get my Foxtel. What happens if we go to Namibia and we say to a 12-year-old or a 14-year-old, well, you know, from the space industry, you get your Foxtel. What's Foxtel? Oh, it's on your TV. What's a TV? Oh, that's right, I've seen it in some of those UNESCO teaching programs, but we don't have one of those. It's no good to me. I'm not interested. Let's empower the scientists tomorrow by actually giving them the responsibility for designing the experiment. And so what AVO will do, apart from allowing PhDs and researchers all around the globe to further study how artificial intelligence interacts and can be used to develop useful robotic tools, we can also use it simultaneously to teach the youth and scientists, our current youth and the scientists tomorrow, and excite them and captivate them in an interest in science and hopefully also engineering. So what's it is? It's got 17 DC servo motors, actuators, it can see, it can talk. It's programmed by adaptive learning. In other words, you have to train it like any dog. And it develops a personality. And here's an AVO actually doing a trick that it's been trained to do. It is not pre-programmed. It has to learn to do this trick if you want it to do something like this. It takes about 50 attempts to learn how to do it once you ask it to do the task. But once it's learned, it'll do it pretty well every time. And it's certainly not shy to show off when it's actually done it. In fact, it's always very proud of its achievements, as any good dog should be. And it's asking for a reward. What are we going to do? We're going to place a dog team of AVO robotic dogs on the moon by 2019. And they can also dance if you teach them. A little black one is saying to the other one, fantastic, you did a good job, because they'll interact with each other as well as with humans. This is not a toy. It was considered by a lot of people as a toy for executives, but it's far more than that. Sony has actually created a revolution actually in robotic programming, and it is actually predicted that this type of robot, the growth rate will exceed that of PCs have in the market, and it's foreseen that this will be the next consumer boom, and Toshiba and Sony, Canon, lots of other companies that otherwise would have gone into the computer or camera business are developing the technologies and expanding into this area. Fujitsu, Hewlett Packard are all looking at these sort of areas. What are we going to launch? Well, we're going to launch it on an SS-18. And an SS-18 is a a leftover intercontinental ballistic missile that's been programmed to go to New York from Russia, take off from Baikonur or something like that, and go over and drop a couple of nuclear weapons. But fortunately, due to arms treaties and that, these have to be disposed of, and they're now being used for, 150 of them are allocated for space launches. And so we're going to use a NEPA SS-18, and we'll place a team of dogs on an existing lunar lander platform developed for transorbital. Our total launch payload will be a mere 100 kilos, and we will actually put this team of dogs onto the moon. What are we going to do? Well, schools can get involved through spacesuit design. You've got to harden AVO against the space environment. So why should the space scientists do it? They already know how to do it. Let's get the school kids out. Get them involved. Get them talking to their local universities, or corresponding with the university on the other side of the globe via the internet. Students can get involved in learning about thermal management, power management. There's a relationship, building relationship side, where you've got to actually build a relationship with your astronaut. You don't want an unhappy astronaut to go into space. And you want an astronaut that will do what you set out to do, to the experiments that you think are important. So each school around the planet could actually train their own astronaut. Now, we might send four or six AVO to the moon, and you'll end up with maybe 30,000, 100,000 schools around the planet, all with their own astronaut. So how can you get their one school's astronaut onto the moon? It's very easy. It's brilliant, in fact. Because what you do is you send the soul and the mind of the Bulawayo Secondary College student astronaut to the moon via the internet. You email it or FTP it to Mission Control, and Mission Control will upload it to the moon. Conduct the experiment, interact with the students. The students want to know how their astronaut get on. The astronaut can be downloaded, come back into the classroom and interact with the kids. This is revolutionary type of teaching. Nothing like this has been tried on the planet. This is a way of breaking down international barriers through children. There are problems. There's many schools that don't have even the internet. But working with UNESCO and corporate partners, we can open up to thousands and thousands of schools around the globe by this technique. And it'll be possible for local papers or national papers, South Africa, South America, Ecuador, wherever. They'll be able to interview their national astronaut that's been to the moon, walked on the moon, and returned safely home. Absolutely fantastic. And you'll also be able to, over the internet and through Mission Control, do an interview while your nation's or your school's astronaut is actually walking on the moon. This is a bold step to inspire young people to go further forward. Postdoctoral research and cooperative robotic interplanetary exploration can be carried out. We have to get there. There's our SS-18. We're using off-the-shelf technology. It's cheap. It's affordable. The amount of money that this project would cost is petty cash for many multinational companies. A single multinational company could fund this basically at less than probably 5% of their profit, not gross income, profit. And this is the transorbital launcher, and we're sending off, and we're going to the moon. We've got our six dogs. We can have a dog sled race across the moon if we got a couple of teams up there. And we are on our way to the moon using a transorbital payload package. This is a lander and satellite developed for transorbital. The video only cuts out at the orbiting phase. plus a plug for Transorbital, who is not involved in this project. We have not approached them, but it's possible. Off the shelf. And when we get there to the moon, well, how many people here in this room saw Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin walk on the moon? I found that exciting and inspiring.
Live.
All right, I should have said live. Yes. I'm assuming that everybody put their hand up and saw it live.
No,
what about if it was the astronaut that you had in your classroom walk live on the moon and you made a difference and you helped these scientists be able to design robots better to go further into space? It's a concept. Gentlemen, this has got legs, more than four. This project is going to the moon. Phase one, geotransitional orbit, about 3,000 kilometres up around our Earth in holding. We're going to transfer orbit, and we're on a 6-day mission to the moon. We'll go into initial orbit, lunar orbit, about 600 kilometres above the moon, and we won't be leaving Mike orbiting there, talking to the other lads to come back. We can land all our astronauts. We can go one better than the Americans. We can put all the astronauts in the capsule onto the moon. We don't need to leave one orbiting. They won't get lonely. Students will be able to actually communicate with the AVERS in transit. Because the dog can be put into a sleep rest mode, woken up when you actually want to communicate. Final descent, and eventually we get into phase five, and then it's out, stepping onto the moon. 11 million school students, I would estimate, is possible to get to. In Botswana, Bulawayo, Johannesburg, Soweto slums, India, Bangkok, Thailand, Russia, Siberia, China, Australia, Outback, Cooper's Creek, Mawson Base, if we had any schools down there, which we don't yet, but we should perhaps. Potentially up to 70,000 schools, if you can do it. And you can have those schools, some of those schools, talking to each other. You can partner them up, and you can partner them with local universities and scientists that want to get involved. This can make space a global ownership. It would help and work towards accomplishing the goals that George Bush, in his speech in January this year, basically said, a new vision of discovery. We will go forward in an international manner to go to the moon and to Mars. This can help realise that dream. And the other thing is, it's real Star Trek too, because you're beam me up, Scotty, or beam me back, Abo, or Spotty, I should say. In fact, it's almost hard to send something as cute as that to the moon. But basically, Neil and Buzz walked on the moon, 1969. Now, man's best friend can walk on the moon 50 years later. And we can have Astro, Buzz, Gizmo, and Missy, or Spotty, or whatever you want to call them. And the reason why Buzz is second is that, I guess Buzz is always second to walk on the moon. Seems very sad. But it's a chance to basically raise education levels on a global scale. Get people that otherwise wouldn't vote for engineering and science to understand that it can come right into your house, into your classroom. Make an enormous difference to how we think about going into the future.